97.9 FM, WCHL, and chapelboro.com present The Art of Potential, an illuminating talk show dedicated to getting your community educated, hired, and inspired. The Art of Potential combines real-world knowledge and expertise aimed at helping our community reach their full potential. Now, The Art of Potential on 97.9 FM, WCHL.
Hi, this is Kristen Heemstra with The Art of Potential Show, and I have a very fun show in store for you today because I have managed to get one of the best humorists in the United States, Jeannie Robertson, to join us. Welcome, Jeannie.
Hey, glad to be here. Thanks for the invitation.
Well, you know, I'm so excited you're talking to us because you really are one of the best humorists in the U.S., and you happen to be right down the street, which...
What? 23 or 4 miles from you at Elon, and you're at where? Carolina.
That's right. I first heard about Jeannie because someone posted one of your videos on Facebook, and it was the one about why you shouldn't send men to the grocery store.
My husband, Left Brain. Don't send a man to the grocery store.
You sent Left Brain to the grocery store, and I'll have you tell us a little bit more about that in a minute. But anyway, I was laughing so hard, and then to find out you were local just tickled me pink. So tell us, what does a humorist do? How do you become a humorist?
Well, it started the groups you speak to and the place you speak and the type of material that you tell. A lot of times people will say to me, you're my favorite comedian, and I smile. Give my pageant smile.
Yeah.
But I'm really not a comedian, and I love comedians, but what I do is different. May I tell you the difference?
Please do.
Okay, the comedian's goal is to make the audience laugh for the certain amount of time they've been given.
Okay.
And you don't have to get everyone to laugh, which means you can insult some of the people.
Okay.
And you can use language that really sort of turns people off. I usually say, look, if you go to a comedy club, you should be prepared for anything. But the whole reason is to make people laugh. Because of my background as a professional speaker for now 51 years with signed contracts, I never thought about attacking people in the audience. I would want them to laugh with me. My goal is to have them laugh just as much and just as hard as you would in a comedy club. But the entire time, I'm weaving a story that illustrates a point. And the meeting planner who hired me, and then, I working on it, we figure it out, and I use material that illustrates what they want done. And if they call me, and they have all of these things done, and it's not what I do, I say, get somebody else. Let me recommend somebody else to you. And because of that, number one, I didn't feel comfortable using four-letter words and off-color stories. And I'm saying you maybe go through that a little period when you first start. You think that's what people want. In convention markets, the same people that will laugh their heads off in a comedy club will go to their convention meeting the next morning, and they will not laugh for the same kind of material.
Right.
They're two different settings. So we like to say you can bring your mama or you can bring your teenagers. So
right.
For 50 years, I've been speaking at conventions. Then, and I was known as a humorist. I may have the keynote. I may have the banquet. And the number of points you have depend on the slot you're given. If you have the banquet slot at a big convention, and all of the members are bringing in their spouses, they don't really want another industry presentation.
No.
So there's very few points, but they leave on a high, and the meeting planner's happy. It's been a long day. Everybody's fine. If you're opening that same convention, then they cannot walk out saying, she was hilarious. What was that about?
Right.
why did we pay this money to bring her in? And so you have to have more points. And then about 5 years ago, even though I am now 70, about 5 years ago, I embraced the Internet. And I went viral on YouTube. And
there are not a lot of 70-year-old women who can say that. Yeah, I went viral on YouTube.
Well, the little boy across the street came banging on the door, and he said, Miss Robertson, stay in the house. Mama says you're viral. But a television station that was syndicated out in California, and their theme is technology, did a story on me when I was out there once, and they about the fact that this has just opened up new doors to me.
Yeah.
And when I've done all these things, people from Nashville came and said, we think you can sell tickets. And so now I'm doing half convention speeches a year and half ticketed events. By the way, the name of their segment was Grandma Goes Viral. And they said, does that hurt your feelings? I said, absolutely not. So in the last 5 years, I said, well, I just don't know who would buy tickets. And the reason is, let me make sure you see the difference. For the professional speaker, I only need to market myself and be known by the meeting planners of a corporation or in a group, or who's planning the meeting for the Chamber of Commerce banquet or so forth. But for selling tickets in a theater, you have to market to everybody.
Yeah. It's
and so I said, nobody will be there. There'll be 10 people there. They have to go to Ticketmaster, buy tickets. They won't go. But the first show was in Dallas, and we sold out immediately, and we just have not looked back since.
And before you sold tickets, though, you were viral. So the,
I was viral. That helped me.
Well, I would think so.
Oh,
I mean,
yes.
You
I'll say in a theater show where there have fewer points, of course, and the people are not coming for a speech, I will say how many of you heard me on or seen me on YouTube, and the hands go up, and how many of you are on my Facebook account, how many of you have purchased something through iTunes. I mean, they know they're there, and I've tried to do other things, too, which we can tell about, but the difference right now is, And my professional speakers friends, this is the difference. They will say, what is the difference between going to Baltimore into the Model Center and selling tickets through Ticketmaster or going over here to this big hotel in Baltimore and speaking at a convention? I say, well, there's a big difference. At a convention, you have to have points.
Yes.
You have to have a message.
Yes.
You have to have all of these things. When I went out in the theater shows, the people that sponsor these shows said, Jeannie, just go out and be funny. Just tell your stories.
Yeah.
And I found out, Kristen, I really had trouble doing that.
Ah.
And so in the theater show, I may have a point that is as simple as we all find each day, you know, what we're looking for. I look for humor, and I'm aware I just ended that sentence with a preface. So you find what we're looking for. And so then the rest of the program can be telling me illustrations of funny stories on the airplanes, in hotels, at conventions, bringing up children. And I really want them to sit there and say, the same thing happened to me.
Right.
You know, she's been a fly on the wall of my house.
Right.
You know, how does she know that? And so it's I'm now wearing two hats. And I think they're cousins. I'm telling some of the same stories in each place.
Yeah.
But the way you frame it and the reason you're there, you always remember why you're there and why the people have come to that program.
Yes.
If you're in a convention, you better give them some meat and potatoes when they leave. If you're in a theater show, they really don't want a lot of meat and potatoes.
Right.
They come there to they do not want to be told to set their goals.
No.
So YouTube has been wonderful. I've had several stories go on YouTube. Don't bungee jump naked.
Yes.
And don't send a man to the grocery store. And in the 60s, I told pageant stories about being a 6'2" contestant in, as we say in the South, the Miss America pageant. But now I'm telling stories about being married to a left brain guy at my age.
Yes.
And all as long as the people in the audience can identify with what you're saying, you're okay.
Well, and that, you know, it's an interesting thing because when I watched, I really enjoyed your video about why you should take a Baptist to Vegas.
I know. My friend Norma Rose.
Norma Rose just was cracking me up or the way you were talking about her. But I did get a glimpse of your audience.
Yes. They're older.
They are.
Well, one reason they are older is we tape in Burlington.
Mm-hmm.
At the Paramount Theater, and it's free, but you have to have a ticket. So we will announce at 10 o'clock on Monday the tickets for the shows become available. And boy, Heidi, they're gone within 24 hours. I said to my husband, left brain, look how fast these are. He says, they're free. Come on. But if you look at the audience, the people who get on those tickets are longtime fans and friends
mm-hmm.
of mine, and
yep.
they are going to be at those. And so when you tell them in June you're taping in September, they write it down. And they're the ones that are sitting by the phone at 10 o'clock. I have to tell you, somebody said at one of my conventions, the people were about 40, and they said, I think I'm at an AARP convention.
Yeah.
My Dynamics, the group that I'm speaking to, now this is for the theater shows that I'm doing, are people 50 and up. Mm-hmm. But because of the internet and what's happened to it, and I think it might be a little bit of a competitor of yours, but SiriusXM on the Family Comedy Channel plays me 10 to 15 times a day.
Oh, wow.
And so when you have, that has taken that age group down.
Yeah.
To more and more 40s.
Yeah.
And I would say young children from 11 to 12 up, and they sit there the whole time, and they've memorized the story, riding to school in the car with their parents.
They do, and yeah, they enjoy it, and parents can listen to it, and it's not depressing like the news.
And their parents are not having to explain things on the way home.
Right.
that's key.
Yes.
But so if you just look at the people from YouTube and who have purchased DVDs and CDs, for example, one of the marketing tips is you always have to know who wants you to come.
Right.
And the last time I recorded, I have 7 DVDs and CDs. They were started off, of course, as audio cassettes and videos in the 98, I think was my first one. But I'm taping again in September. And the people that are helping me, and I've hired Elon University's television department to do it again. The younger people will say, do you really need CDs anymore because you can download it, aren't you, on iTunes? And I am.
Yeah.
And I know my audience.
You do.
And they buy those CDs. Now, they might have to say, now, is the CD the one you hear?
Right.
or can I see it too?
Right.
But they know what they want, and I know what they want.
Yeah.
I'm very big with truckers.
Yeah.
Because all night long they're listening as they drive along.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm big with people in Texas and folks that drive 50 miles to get to the grocery store.
Yeah, it is a big state.
Yep, it's a big state. So this is
truckers and Texans. Now there's an audience for you.
Texas is my, did you say West Texas?
No, I just said truckers in Texas.
Truckers and Texans, yeah. And Californians, because they're on that freeway all the time.
Yeah.
But you have to know who your audience is. And in the same vein, it's exactly like being a professional speaker, Kristen, because for years I spoke at every high school group, 4-H, student council, FFA. I did all of the state conventions and the national conventions. And then when I got to be 45 and so, I came off the stage one day in California and I had just spoken to 6,000 sixth graders.
Wow.
And I called my assistant, who's still my assistant, and I said, I don't want to do this age anymore.
Mm-hmm.
The people that speak to that age get them rah, rah, cheering and singing songs and doing all of that type of stuff, and I said, it's not me.
Right.
And when you mention being in the Miss America pageant, they look at you like, why?
Right.
And I'm looking at it as a funny thing.
Right.
So I guess what this is all boiling down is you've got to know your audience and market to them that way. Somebody said, it's getting to where you may not need a website anymore. I said, my people still go to the website.
Right. I know my people. They still go to the website. We're going to
call here. They want to talk to my assistant, Tony. They've heard stories about her, and they want to talk about to her. You know, is left brain there today?
Right.
Oh, I have to tell you, Norma Rose is my bestest friend.
Can you hold on? We need to take a quick break. Let's take a break because I want to hear all about Norma Rose. I so enjoyed that story.
Thank you.
You are listening to The Art of Potential Show with Kristen Hiemstra. Please take a moment, like us on Facebook, and follow us on Twitter. We'll be right back with more Jeannie Robertson.
You're listening to The Art of Potential on 97.9 FM, WCHL.
Welcome back. This is Kristen Hiemstra with The Art of Potential Show, and I am talking with humorist Jeannie Robertson. So, Jeannie, one of the segments you do is taking a Baptist to Vegas, and Norma Rose. Tell me about her.
Stories I have developed, and this was not by accident, although I realize it now, and it is something that I predetermine when I speak. I've developed a cast of characters.
Yeah.
and they're real people. And when we take, they're sitting in the front, and the cameras pick them up, and we put their names. They're recognized on the street. One is, of course, my husband, Left Brain.
Yeah.
And then, of course, my assistant of now 36 years, who was at Auburn with me. We were both students at Auburn.
Oh,
and wound up in Alamance County, North Carolina, with our husband. And then my bestest friend, her name, my assistant is Tony, my bestest friend, Norma Rose, and that's the story. And I also have a friend in New York who tries to help me with my clothes since I'm 6 feet 2 inches.
Yeah.
That, and she's Jane Tucker from New York City. She comes down here and goes through my closet and Tuckerizes me. But Norma Rose is my bestest friend, and there are three or four stories. And if I don't have a story about Norma Rose on the tape, they'll say, what's happened to Norma Rose?
Right.
The one I think you might have seen, because the way you mentioned it, is don't go to Vegas without a Baptist.
Mm-hmm.
And she went to Vegas as a Baptist with me, but she did explain that she did not gamble. And I finally got her to go in there and look at the slot machine, and I told her the truth. This is why I'm choosing for us to try to play the slot machine. The slot machine is not gambling. The word gamble means you have a chance. And so, of course, before long, she couldn't keep her arm off that thing. And it was the fastest I've ever seen a Christian change. The woman sat down on the stool, a good Southern Baptist, and with an hour jumped up an Episcopal. And so the question becomes, did this really happen? How much of it is made up?
Yeah.
Well, it happened. Now, you have to take your stories and work with them. The art of doing storytelling and weaving a story is maybe a whole other topic. But we happened. We hit the jackpot. I mean, we went nuts. We did not know what we were doing. And so it developed into a very good story. As long as it had, at the end, a surprise punchline, and the story did. And it still does. And it's one of the YouTube clips.
Yep.
So, but she also is on with the story about buying ring guards and trying to make me look better cheaply without this New York person who's also her friend. So there's a story about her in every video now. She loves it. She sits right on the front row.
Yeah.
She does it. But it's proven to be a nice surprise at this era of my or stage of my career. In the 60s, I think I told you in the last segment, I told stories about I was Miss Graham, where I grew up, and then Miss North Carolina, and then went to the Miss America. And then in the 70s, I told about emceeing beauty pageants, and I developed a story that became a trademark story for about 50. But then I began to get older, and I had a teenager, and I tell those.
Yes.
And now I'm telling the stories about living with a left brain person.
Right.
And, you know, with the 27 steps you have to do before you can go to bed.
Right.
young people go to bed. People my age get ready to go to bed. So I think that keeps me fresh, and it also lets me go back to repeat speeches. I just did a Southern magazine 8 years in a row and hadn't repeated a story, and I've done an hour every year.
Wow.
So that keeps me fresh. What are we talking about? You just punch a button, I start talking.
Yeah, no, I'm just enjoying. We were talking about Norma Rose and and my question to you is, Jeannie, it sounds like you're always looking for the story. So it's like you have this specific, like a humor lens. Like, how can I make this funny?
Well, I have the speakers jokingly call it Jeannie's Journal. And what happened is, Left Brain was with me on a speech. And Left Brain played basketball. You're not going to like this in Chapel Hill. He played basketball at Duke.
Oh,
are you going to still put my segment? Yeah. You may cut that out. Anyway, that they had a ball game on, and he said, I don't want to go down to the banquet. And I had at that time a goal to find one humorous thing a day that may turn into a story.
Oh, interesting.
Or maybe be a punchline. I thought that was a worthy goal. I'd had that goal for years, and I kept notes. And I went down to the banquet. The woman next to me was a character. I gave my speech. And when I got back to the room, he said, did you? He said the first time there was a commercial, did you find your funny thing tonight? And I said, yes. And I told him what it was. And a little while later, I said, oh, I got to tell you about this woman that was sitting next to me and what she said. And he said, did you write that down? And it dawned on me, as soon as I got my one funny story, I just quit for the day.
Uh-huh.
So I said to him, if you would go with me everywhere, when I talk to a cab driver or talk to a flight attendant, if you would say, did you get something? He said, well, I'm not going with you.
Yeah.
So I made up a questionnaire of my daily daily experiences, either at home or on the road. And I don't care where I had lunch. I don't care about how many people I saw. I'm only, this is a journal for humor only.
Oh, wow.
And what I have found is if I jot down notes by the end of the year when I have some time to really work on it, when I take off December, the truth is I can't remember why was that so funny.
Right.
But if I'll go ahead and forget periods and commas and just write up what happened right then I will wind up with 400 or 500 of these. If you're making 100 speeches a year, or now speeches and, of course, theater shows, then if you do that and get it down, then when you sit down to be creative out of all those stories, if you wind up with 20 new stories, really good stories. And here's another secret if you think people are interested in storytelling.
Oh, yes.
I collect what could is because the premise. The something could have happened on the airplane, and I write it down, and there's no punchline.
Huh.
But that doesn't matter. I can get a punchline later, maybe.
Okay.
Or if they're talking very loud, two women in the plane behind me, rather than get irritated, I lean back.
Yeah.
You know, to see what they're saying. And if one of them says something funny, I'll write that down. Now, I may not have a story, but I can back it up and write a story that there's the punchline. And if you do that every single day or trip, it works. And I have the same assistant for 36 years who is funny, and she knows what we're looking for.
Yeah.
And she comes in and she said, okay, I just got a call. You won't believe what this woman said. Well, that can become a whole segment on things people say to us in our office. But you've got to get that material down.
And
a lot of times I'll have a funny, funny punchline, and it'll take years to work up a story, or I'll have a story that just going nowhere. And I've even, once a year I go on a humor retreat with seven other humorists, people who do what I do. And we're to all different degrees funny, and we take turns for several days. And when my turn gets up, I might say, okay, guys, this is a great premise, and I just can't get it anywhere. And tell the premise, and our deal is, if we help you make it funnier, it's yours. I can't come later and say, no, I came up with that.
Right.
And I've studied the Andy Griffith Show and have even written about it, and that's what they used to do, sit at a table and just, you know, throw out ideas and so forth. So you're working on it all the time. Fortunately for me, what is my hobby has also become a way of life, and it is my business.
That is terrific. Let's take a break because I want to hear more about this, because this is how we all want to live eventually.
I hope so.
Yes. So hold on. You're listening to The Art of Potential Show with Kristen Hiemstra, and I am talking with the wonderful Jeannie Robertson. We will be right back.
You're listening to The Art of Potential on 97.9 FM, WCHL.
Welcome back. This is Kristen Hiemstra, and I am talking to the wonderful Jeannie Robertson. She is a humorist, and we're talking about storytelling. And Jeannie, you were just saying you have a habit of writing down what could be a funny story or what could be a funny punchline. As you were talking, what I was thinking is it almost sounds like working out.
Well, it does. It's something I do every day.
Yes.
And it is a hobby mine, too. But it is what I do to make a living. I'm very fortunate. Let me give you an example.
Please.
In the Atlanta airport, all planes crowded, for example. I mean, all planes, canceled. And it's going to be that way. Everybody knows it's going to be that way. They have no idea when any of the planes are going to open up. Well, a lot of people get angry. So when I left teaching and went into speaking full-time after speaking part-time for a while, I started thinking, this is where I play stories.
Oh, yes.
And I would follow along after people.
I'm sure they didn't notice a 6'2" tall blonde woman.
With a tablet and a pencil. Oh, I would sit in gate areas, and then one day in the gate area, I realized everybody there was furious except me, and all of a sudden it hit me that by looking for humor not only gave me speech material and now show material, but it made me enjoy traveling more. And so when people come up sometime and they will say to me, I wish I had a sense of humor like yours, but I can't tell a joke or a story, I say, well, number one, I don't tell any jokes. Number two, telling a story well doesn't mean you have a sense of humor. You know, I know a lot of people who are very funny on stage, and they don't have a sense of humor if something goes wrong. But by looking for the humor that's around us every single day, and we affect our own lives, and we also affect the people around us. So it's just fun.
I would think that'd be a great thing to teach kids.
I think you can teach kids this. I think you can influence young people to have a sense of humor, just like you tell them the fork is on the left and the knife and the spoon are over here on the right.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll give you a couple of tips. Instead of saying to your young elementary children every night, did you turn in that spelling? Did you get that test? Did you do such and such? Make it a habit to say, tell me something funny that happened.
Yeah.
Now, what this leads to is, for a child's sense of humor, you will hear a lot of things that aren't that funny.
Right.
You encourage them to tell
to
it.
You.
Right. Now you encourage them when something happens in school, to say, subliminally, they know it's funny, but now they're thinking, wait till I get home.
Yeah.
And then if somebody gets a story that is humorous, you encourage them to tell the same story over and over. A new person comes in one night. Tell them your story about the fireflies. And so at the National Speakers Association meeting, and I'm a past national president, so I'm biased. I think if you want to be a professional speaker, you have to belong. And that's where the information is. And they've asked often, why are the people who call themselves humorists from the South or Southwest? And the comedians are from New York and New Jersey. And I said, what's the type of material? We're weaving the longer stories. And they say, but how and why?
The only thing
I can think of is the Southern family years ago, sat in the backyard to keep cool.
Right.
And you told stories. And if an Aunt Sue came up, you wanted little Betsy to tell it again.
Right.
You're trying to see if she can tell it same way twice. And before long, little Betsy's story gets better. And they'll say, nobody can tell this like you can, Aunt Vivi, so you tell it. You got to tell this. And we did that. That's the way we all came up, and I hope we're not losing that. The value of passing stories down. I'll tell you what I believe. We hear all the time, you can't take it with you.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, everybody's referring to money and wealth and things.
Yeah.
But I think if you don't record or pass down your family stories, you take them with you.
Ah.
And
yeah, you're right.
For, if you don't want to be on the stage, you record those stories, tell them, and you make sure somebody else in the family can tell it. And then they pass on. It's wonderful. So I've just made a living out of doing what my relatives like to do. So if you're writing stories and something happens, I'll give you an example. And this is not what I would call a put on YouTube for my funniest thing, but 2 weeks ago I'm looking every day, and I was in Fort Worth at the Bass Performance Hall. We had like 2,000 people that came to hear me. I was the only one on the program. I came in that afternoon to a big hotel in Fort Worth, and Fort Worth is a great place. And a woman behind the thing, I said, I hope y'all have room service in the middle of the day. I got to get a hamburger or something to eat. She said, oh, we have 24-hour room service. It starts at 6 in the morning and it ends at midnight. Well, that's not a whole story, but
right.
You can put that down as something somebody would say. That's
right.
But you don't let it get away. You have to record it.
Yes.
Or you will not remember the exact words she used that made it fun.
So this is, you have a separate journal, I assume, from the to-do list that you're carrying around with you.
That's right. Well, I put down on the to-do list, every day find something humorous. So that when I'm looking, got to get this done, got to do this, got to call these seven people, and I got to make sure to look for something funny. So if you're in line at the bank or somewhere and you know it's going to be a few minutes because you went at lunch.
Right.
And, you know,
it's on you.
Instead of shifting your weight from foot to foot, I start conversation with who's behind me in line.
Uh-huh.
And then you
little do they know. Right.
You never know when somebody might say something that's just a little bit humorous. And then I hustle on back and write it down.
Well, again, great advice. We're going to take a break, and then when we come back, I want to know how you got into this and how other people you've seen get into the public speaking.
Sure.
So, you are listening to the Art of Potential show with Kristen Heemstra. Please take a moment to like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter.
You're listening to The Art of Potential on 97.9 FM, WCHL.
Welcome back. This is Kristen Heemstra. You are listening to The Art of Potential show, and we are having a wonderful time with Jeannie Robertson.
Thank you. I am too.
It's just so fun to talk to you about this. So a question for you, how did you end up in this world? How did you end up as a speaker? That's one of my questions because, like you said, you were Miss Graham, Miss North Carolina, and then you went on to the Miss America pageant, as it's called.
For Southerners.
And, you know, but back in the day, you're 70 years old, and so you were a trailblazer, you know.
There weren't a lot of women around, but there certainly were some. I think one of my biggest advantages is I didn't know about other speakers, so I wrote my own material.
Okay.
And I think a lot of times when a young person wants to get into speaking and they listen to all the DVDs of all the speakers out there, they have a tendency to sort of come away from that sounding like them.
Okay, that would make sense.
It does, and that's why I had to quit reading Irma Bombeck.
Because
I was beginning, if I sit to write something, I was all of a sudden a suburban and a mother in a big car with bunches of kids, and I didn't cook, and I didn't do that.
Right.
It was not me. Well, beauty pageants, I know they don't like you to use the word beauty. You're supposed to say pageants. Take a lot of criticism, and some of it is deserved, and some of it is not. I always tell people who say, I just hate them. Well, I said, think about it like a small-town talent show.
Right.
Calm down. But the young woman who wins the title of Miss North Carolina drops out of college for a year, or if she's already graduated and has in advanced degree work or whatever, she takes a year sabbatical from her job. And during that year, for me, I dropped out of Auburn. I was a student at Auburn. I think I told you I'm on the trustees of Elon.
Right.
I love Elon. But I went to Alabama. Grandparents were there and went to school. And I took the year off. And during that year, I was 19 and then I turned 20, a rising junior in college. I made more than 500 little speeches.
Wow.
You cannot buy that kind of an opportunity.
Right.
It was fascinating. Right. It took me about a week to say something funny.
Okay.
And the audience responded, and I thought, wow, I like that.
Yeah.
Because the first speech as Miss North Carolina after 2 days of interviews and this kind of thing was in Fayetteville.
Oh.
And I said to my daddy, what would I say in Fayetteville? And he said, every time I go through Fayetteville, I get a speeding ticket. So in my speech, I said, it's so nice to be here because my daddy said, every time he goes through Fayetteville, he gets a speeding ticket. And I had him in the palm of my hand.
Yeah.
And so in December, I won in July, the JCs called me over to Raleigh to talk to me about the next summer's pageant where I would play a role and crown the new Miss North Carolina.
Right.
And every year, they had back former winners to do what they call fillers when the contestants were changing to their talent.
Yeah.
And they would bring, what they were really doing was paying people to come in there, and they didn't give them much, but they did, and they were sometimes bringing in better talent than the contestants.
Right.
They could be singing right after three girls who had sung, women. And so,
so
they said, you know, what about, you're so funny, and everybody thinks you're funny. What if you just set off stage, and anytime we need a filler, you just get up and walk out there and tell something funny for 4 nights. And I said, great. And so from December till that summer, I just worked. I was on fire to find funny stories.
Yes, you were.
Being a 6'2" Miss North Carolina. Then about May, they came and said, well, that takes care of Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. And listen to this on live television statewide. Oh. They said, but Tuesday night, the contestants and their parents and all the people in Raleigh who are supporting the pageant have a banquet. We've always had a Miss America speak, you know, since you're there.
Right.
Could you do 30 minutes that night? And I said, I'll keep looking. So I did that, and when that week was over, I was solid. The next week, I crowned the new Miss North Carolina, and the next week I spoke at four conventions. And the parents would come up. At that time, a lot of the meetings were male-only. Mm-hmm. And they would have a ladies' night, in quotes, and they'd say, can you do our Rotary ladies' night? If you string these stories together, you're doing it. And I would say, well, sure. And I just kept speaking for 51 years.
Did you go back to college?
Yes. I went back to Auburn. I graduated. I taught physical education. My minor was speech. I coached basketball 9 years, but I was in campus politics. I don't know how I did it now, and president of the women, Associated Women Government. But the every weekend or in Alabama, the word had spread, and I was taking as light a load as I could possibly take and go to another football season and do all the speeches I could do. And then when I taught, 1 month I looked and I had 12 banquets on the, I was teaching in Durham, I had 12 banquets booked for 1 month and was teaching full and coaching and had the cheerleaders. And so I thought, something's got to give.
Yeah.
And so I stopped and printed a brochure, and then I could try. People had begun to call from places like Missouri,
okay.
And I couldn't go because I couldn't get back to my classes. So I just stopped everything and went into it full time. I never looked back.
No.
And you just keep booking the speeches. You learn how to market yourself, and you keep booking the speeches. And for me, not everybody's this way. Some people are what I call one-trick pony speakers, and they have great careers. They have one speech, and they ride it the entire time. And if you went to Pikes Peak, you know, and left your jacket and, you know, all of these things, and you had a story like
that. Right,
right. You might tell that story for the rest of the
time. And it'd have enough nuances to...
And that's fine. But for me, I just realized I got bored, and for 16 years, I emceed a pageant almost every weekend somewhere in the South. And I really honed the material that I was using at the pageant. But then I began to notice, well, phooey, that two of those judges heard me 2 weeks ago.
Right.
So I just kept getting more material. I'm having a good time. And interestingly enough, how it all helps you. When the people approached me about doing the theater shows, and I had just been given 100 and some speeches a year for all these years, and it usually takes a couple of days, so I was on the road. But their first question was, do you have that one speech we just heard last night, or
how
much material have you got?
Yeah.
And later I said, why did you ask that? And they said, you don't put a lot of money in promoting a show that's never going to go anywhere.
Right, no.
And to talk to people who say, I'm going to write this.
Right.
I don't have it right now, but I've got a lot of material. I was just very fortunate. I had a lot of material.
Yes, you did, because you've been writing it down for so long.
It's crazy. You know, if I hear a lady interviewed in, 45 years ago about how she's had a funny, and she gives a funny life, and she's 104.
Right.
I was writing that down then and thinking, maybe if I get to be 104, nobody will remember this life.
Right, right.
But in speaking, you don't want to be a copy of anybody.
Right. Yeah, you've got to be original.
When I went into speaking, I got all these old joke books. For that year, I was Miss North Carolina. I was planning for those 4 or 5 days in Raleigh. And I read these stories, and I did find out that in old joke books, much of the material is gender-related, and
yes.
Most of it's for men.
Right.
And I think women were the first to realize our stories, because I went into this bar one night, and
right.
It doesn't fit with me.
No, right.
You know? And so you begin to tell your own stories.
Which makes perfect sense. All right, so we have about a minute left.
Oh, no.
Oh, well, it's that's great.
Okay.
It's great. So one piece of advice you would give to people for marketing themselves, what would it be?
I think I've almost given it. We found out that we've never cold called.
Okay.
We have never, my assistant is not going to call the phone and say, I've got somebody here I think you need. And some people have 5 and 6 offices doing that.
Yes.
What I need to do is go in there and blow them away.
Okay.
And then we let the phone ring.
So I'm going to put a link to your website on mine, theartofpotential.com. And to the audience, I say, just go and look this woman up on YouTube. You will be absolutely entertained, as you know, as long as you have those videos on. And you, what are you at, like 7 million views now?
Within another 100,000, we'll have 20 million.
Well, so I'm sorry about that. Way underestimated that, but yeah. You have just listened to the Art of Potential show with Kristen Heemstra. Please take a moment to like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter.